The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from the Carter Subaru Studio and streaming on Facebook Live. Welcome to our top stories this hour. And this conversation I've been looking forward to for a while now. So let's get right to The Big Lead.
The Big Lead, Dory Monson Show exclusive.
Well, during the campaign, King County Sheriff Mitzi Jo Hanknik said all I had to do was pick up the phone. She'd come on anytime. And there's a bunch of stuff involving your department in the news. And Mitzi Jo Hanknik is in the studio with us. Welcome. Glad you could come in.
Thank you, Dory. Glad to be here.
Let's start with the breaking news of the day. And that is your agency, King County Sheriff's, ended up doing most of the investigation or much of the investigation in the alleged rape. And then there was an alleged DV involving Bellevue police officers. And we just found out an hour ago the prosecutors have dismissed the domestic violence assault and they've opted not to pursue the rape charges. They say there was a false accusation by this woman. What can you tell me about all this?
Yeah, Dory, we were asked to do the initial investigation by Bellevue Police Department, and so we took that on in our Criminal Investigations Division and dug deep and then presented all that information to the prosecutor, except for a side piece that Bothell PD did.
Okay, and do you know what kind of information led to the dismissal of these charges?
Like you, I saw this when I came into your office.
Okay.
So I'll get a chance to look at that and see what the prosecutor said.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I mean, they said that the woman had some mental illness issues and we'll try to get more details on all of this. Okay. I want to start by congratulating you on a couple of things. I know a bunch of your deputies and sergeants, and I think you have a really great staff. And I was very impressed after that horrible tragedy in Burien a few weeks ago at how quickly your sheriffs, your deputies, your sergeant, how quickly you were able to apprehend the suspects in that case. And I told Ryan Abbott that, and I will tell you that, too. I thought that was a really impressive bit of police work.
Thank you. I think we have amazing crew all across the sheriff's office. We're very blessed with that.
I also think that it is more important for any government agency for transparency than police departments, because you guys have incredible, you know, power of force. And I love your PIO, Ryan Abbott. He's one of the most responsive PIOs I've ever encountered, and I congratulate you on that, too.
Thank you.
Yeah, okay. You're starting a gang unit, and I know this is something you're really proud of. So tell me, how significant is this gang problem? Because I have heard some people try to downplay it, and those of us who talk about the news and the people I know who are in the know that this is a really significant issue around here.
Yeah, well, it's been significant to me because I've lived it the last 2 years. So when I was the precinct commander out at our Southwest Precinct, White Center, Skyway, those areas, we were involved daily basis with this gang war that's going on in the South End. And it's just not in our jurisdiction. It's across jurisdictions across the south part of King County.
And how pervasive is it? I mean, and what's fueling it? I assume the fact that we have such a drug problem is often connected to these gang problems.
It can be. But in this particular circumstance, it's about disrespect. It's disrespecting one gang to another. And as much as crossing out graffiti, that's where this whole thing started.
Well, an issue that's been really front and center, especially in Burien, where they had enough signatures to give the people a vote on the issue of sanctuary. Do you see any connection between we have a sanctuary county, we have a de facto sanctuary state, we have, I think we're the fourth largest population of illegals of any state in the country. Do you see a connection between our sanctuary policies and our gang problems?
I don't see a connection between that and any crime, and I don't see it as a connection with gangs. I really don't. Our focus has always been, at least the 34 years that I've been with the sheriff's office, is focusing on crimes, criminal actions, and making sure victims are protected. So it hasn't impacted the way we do our job. What will impact it is being able to, through the executive's budget and the blessing of the council, is to get a gang unit started, a regional task force started on this problem.
When you say you don't see any connection, this is an issue that I talk about an awful lot on my show. We don't have any stats. We don't have any data on how many crimes are committed by illegal immigrants here, correct? Because nobody asks the question. You're not allowed
right.
to ask the question. Does that make sense? That we say that that's not a factor, but we have absolutely no data to back it up. Wouldn't we be better served as a police department, as a society, if we had data? And because there's all these bogus stats that say illegals commit less crimes than American citizens. And we have no idea because nobody in the process, cops, the courts, are even allowed to ask the question in sanctuary areas. Wouldn't we be better served if we knew what the connection is between, you know, undocumented and crime committed?
I see what you're asking, but for me, what's important is I would get people to report crime. That's an issue we have across the county for a variety of reasons, and not even related to immigrant populations, but people just picking up the phone to report crime so that we can respond to it properly. And you see my team out there all the time working to arrest folks and put the bad guys in jail.
But data is valuable. And I mean, there's on the King County Jail form, the intake form, there is a box for citizenship status, because that's a question that used to be routinely asked, and now it's left blank. It's been left blank for years. I'm a kind of a data-driven person, and I would think that everybody in positions of power would want to have data so that they can understand whether there is any connection, or, as we are being told, that there's no connection between immigration status and crime. Just as a person in power, a person in command, wouldn't you love to have that data?
I don't think that particular data is going to help us do our daily job, which is responding to 911 calls and doing investigations into the crimes that are committed in King County. That just doesn't come into play with how we go about our daily business. And it may help others. It may help you. It may help others that do that.
I'd love to have it. It would help me, but I can't get it. I can't get that data from anybody because it doesn't exist. And, you know, here's one of my contentions, Sheriff, that our region has become a magnet destination for an awful lot of groups, for drug addicts, for street vagrants, for the illegal population. We have an extra congressional seat in Washington State because of the number of undocumented people here, which is crazy. We're one of only two states in the country because they count in the census. But so we know, you know, some of the reasons why politicians don't want that information. But, I just think that we have become a region where we are attracting an awful lot of people here that are contributing to a pretty significant crime issue that you and your people have to deal with.
And we're just trying to keep our head above water, which is why I really like the fact that we've got at least now the groundwork for a gang unit started.
Okay. And look, I appreciate the gang unit. Was it just a couple weeks ago? King County Prosecutor, I had Dan Satterberg on the show. We have now done a de facto legalization of drugs in King County. Snohomish County did the same thing several months ago, and I talked to their prosecutors about it. They have announced that if you have personal possession amounts less than a gram, what was it, a gram? I don't know drug weights, but whatever it is, small amounts of heroin, meth, cocaine, powder, crack, whatever, that they will not prosecute. That is a de facto legalization of drugs. As our King County Sheriff, do you support what the prosecutor's doing with that?
I think for me, it's a separation of the work that we do. And so that's a decision he's making. I've not made a decision to stop investigating those cases and putting the information forward to the prosecutor.
But will your people, if you encounter somebody who's got less than a gram of heroin, and you know that the prosecutor's already said he's not going to prosecute it, you and your guys, you're not going to bang your heads against the wall and go through all the paperwork and all the rigmarole if you know that it's not going to go anywhere. So, will you still arrest people if they're carrying heroin?
I have to look at what we're going to do. We still have to confiscate the illegal drugs, right? So there's paperwork involved with it. And so I want to make sure that we're documenting for our aspect, for the work that we're still doing. And if the prosecutor doesn't prosecute that stuff, we still need to account for the work that we have to do every day. And so at what point do we cross the bridge where we stop doing that work? Haven't made that decision yet.
But you understand my point.
You get your point.
The word is out that if you want the path of least resistance, if you're a heroin addict, You know, we had a Seattle City Councilwoman who wanted to look into the taxpayers buying heroin for the addicts. We have the worst property crime in Seattle of any major city in the country, to the extent point where, and that's Seattle PD, I'm not putting this on you or your department, but we're really not prosecuting, we're not even investigating a lot of property crimes. Heroin is legal if you have personal possession amounts. Government might open places where you can inject under the watchful eye of government. The word is out. Aren't we attracting the dregs of our nation to our region with our policies?
Well, you know where I stand against heroin injection sites, right?
I do not.
I'm against them.
Good.
So I can tell you from that standpoint, I've taken that stand. There's, you know, the opportunity to talk to the prosecutor and find out more about what he's doing and what his decisions are. That's in his side of the branch of the world. From my side, I still need to document disposal of narcotics and that we're, you know, documenting that we're legally in the right place to take possession of those things as they occur. And so to do that, sometimes we have to do, you know, the paperwork to document that. On the broader scope that you're talking about, a lot of it is in the city of Seattle. I live in the city of Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
But my work is also when I'm dealing with outside of the city, unincorporated King County, our contract cities and other places. So,
yeah, and what I deal with a lot is public policy with government. That's mm-hmm. what I talk about every day. And is there anything wrong in my thinking that we have a lot of policies? And, you know, some examples. I've become friends with that woman who was brutally attacked in the restroom at Golden Gardens, Kelly Heron. That was a guy who came up here from Arizona. There was a woman brutally raped at a car dealership in Ballard. That guy came up here from Texas. There was a man stabbed to death up in Bellingham Saturday morning while walking in the park. That guy came here from out of state with multiple drug convictions. It's my perspective that we are just attracting because of our policies. And that's where, you know, I would love to know your voice on these policies that I'm so opposed to. Because I grew up here. I grew up in Ballard. I've seen what's happened to our city over my lifetime, and it breaks my heart, Sheriff. Anything wrong with my perspective on this?
Well, I think it's your perspective, and I respect your perspective. I would like your data-driven guy. I think it's about time to figure out through more data what exactly is happening and who's connected with it. And I just don't think it comes from undocumented immigrant populations. I think it's, like you said, it's from across the nation.
Yeah, and I'm separating that out because I don't know. I don't know the undocumented numbers because that data doesn't exist. But the drug problem, it's obvious. I mean, it's obvious what's going on. I think we could spend $1 billion on housing the homeless. And we'd have, you know, if we could put 5,000 people in housing tomorrow, I think we'd have 6,000 from elsewhere in the country coming up here because they know that we're the path of least resistance.
It's complicated, right? It very much is.
Okay. Another issue that's been in the news a lot, King County Council, this gun law, they're modeling it after the Seattle gun law, where a citizen with a gun, if it's not secured in a safe, and I absolutely believe as a gun owner that you should keep your gun in a safe. That is my personal policy. I don't think government should tell me to do it. But I'm an absolute believer in safe storage of guns. I didn't even have a gun when my girls were little. I just chose not to. But what they're saying is somebody breaks into your house, kicks down your doors, breaks through a window, your gun's in your nightstand. They take that and commit a crime with that gun. The gun owner, who's the theft victim, can face time in jail. They can be fined up to $10,000. From a law enforcement perspective, is that a good law that the King County Council has just enacted?
Well, I think the law is a little bit more dynamic than that. I think that I'm asking my legal advisor to look into it and how we enforce it and go about doing those investigations will come out of it. So if you give me a little more time to pull through that, I can give you a much better answer.
See, and why wasn't that part of the process before they passed this law? I mean, I would love it if they had let you get the time. Because I know there are some places, you know, Highway 2, where you're in Snohomish County forever, and then you get into that little north or northeastern corner of King County. I know that your response time, if something happens out there, it's got to be 30, 45 minutes, depending on, you know, the day and the number of cops you have out there. But and if somebody lives by themselves and they want to keep their gun in their nightstand, somebody breaks into their house, and then we're going to tell them, you're going to go to jail for that? That's just craziness to me.
Well, and we'll see how it goes. So I'll back up a little bit. I got some information about the law, but it wasn't until this process was pretty well being developed at the county council level for the ordinance before I was told about it. So
you weren't a significant voice in their decision-making process, or top cop in the county?
Well,
the county council didn't make you an integral part of that?
No, we talked after it was already under construction and just about to be released, and so we were able to work on a couple of things on it, but not to the degree, they're their own legislative branch, and so as I would hope they would have come a little bit sooner, but that doesn't always happen. It's not how it always works.
It seems to me that we've got, I think, 7 of the 9 county council members live in Seattle. You got a lot of suburban and rural people here in King County, and I often believe that their way of life and the necessities of their life are not very well represented by a county council that is so Seattle dominant. What do you think?
I think you've got a couple of county council people who work out and have coverage of those unincorporated areas and those more suburban populations that work really, really hard for their constituents.
Yeah, they're really outmanned in those conversations. One last thing. I appreciate you taking the time. A lot of your deputies and other people who work for King County Sheriff, they have reached out to me confidentially. And I talked to your predecessor about this. They've told me that our county executive uses King County Sheriff's Office as a personal Uber on an almost nightly basis in the guise of a security detail. Is there anything that you can share with me, if not specifics, because I understand that security has to be secure, but can you tell me what the policies are when elected officials get a security detail?
Well, over the course of my experience, it's been the executive, and it hasn't always been during my 34 years in the sheriff's office. It came on at a certain point. I'd have to find out when. But it's a daytime security detail of one person who drives the county executive to meetings and policies. There are other times when we provide broader protective to the county council when they're outside of the courthouse at a remote site having a council meeting at another location. We do some protection there. But it's not meant for, we don't drive for after hours things. It's work.
That never happens? Because, man, I tell you, you have a bunch of staffers who have confided in me and are very frustrated. And they've told me it's like a personal Uber for social things in the evening.
So at the first of the year, I made sure we had our policy and practice in place about that.
Okay. And that policy and practice is being followed?
Nobody's come to me to say otherwise.
Okay.
Yeah. Ooh. I would hope they're following it.
They've come to me. They've come to me. I appreciate you coming in here and talking about all this stuff, and I'd love to keep going because I know that, crime is the most significant issue that I hear from my listeners every single day, and I'd love for us to be able to talk about this stuff on a regular basis.
Thanks, Story. I'd love to do that, and shout out again to all the wonderful employees at King County Sheriff's Office.
Yeah, I think you have a great staff, and again, I congratulate you on the gang unit because that is something that needs to be prioritized, and I'm really glad you're doing that.
Thank you so much.
Okay. King County Sheriff Mitzi Johanknik joining us. That is your big lead for this hour.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
Ursula's going to check the news, and then we'll count down our favorite sound bites of the day. Awesome audio coming up next here on the Dory Monson Show. All very interesting.
That was fun. I appreciate the sheriff.
I thought she was wonderful.
She was great.
Yeah, I like talking to her. Should I keep it at that?
Yes. It's all good.
Yeah?
Yep.
Okay. We'll keep it at that.
No, she was great, really. And I appreciate some of the people that helped make that happen.
Jeez. Oh, man.
And I hope she comes on again.
I do, too. I do,
know.
Too.
I thought, you know, there are...
What are we,
there
okay,
are hard,
let's stop being cryptic.
No. There's some difficult questions, and I thought she handled them very well. And sometimes handlers get upset with questions asked. But I don't think she was upset at all.
She didn't seem upset with me in the slightest.
But her handler, the person that she brought with her, was not very happy with me.
Yelled at you?
Maybe a little. Raised her voice.
I don't like that. That doesn't make me happy. Look, the whole point of a First Amendment and of a free press is we're supposed to be able to ask our government officials questions. And and Mitzi Jo Hanknecht specifically told me during the campaign that we could ask her anything at any time. And
this is not coming from her. I thought she did great.
I did
too.
She
had no complaints. She said, I'll see you next time.
We had a very pleasant before and after where she thanked me for coaching basketball. I found out that she played basketball at the UW and up at Western. We had a very nice chat. We had a very nice farewell. And then I find out that you get chewed out because of the interview that I do.
I can handle it.
Well, I know you can.
There was a miscommunication. She thought that a question wouldn't be asked, and I never agreed to that. So... is what it is. But I never, just so people know,
during
during
the campaign said, call me anytime that we can talk about anything.
You know, I think sometimes there are people that just get extra protective, as I am to you. I am very protective of you. So I understand the passion behind that. But that I thought it was unnecessary at this time. I thought it was unnecessary, but...
Do you have the soundbite from the campaign?
Yeah, but we have nothing bad to say about the sheriff. She
right,
was great.
Exactly.
She answered the questions.
Yes.
She came on the show. She was happy. She said she was happy to
like
come back.
Like you said, you're defensive of me. I'm very defensive of you.
Yeah, well, I can handle it. This is part of the gig.
Man, I tell you, government people. Okay.
Hey, here, let's focus on the fact that, you know what, because there's so many people who don't come on the show, she did come on the show.
I know! We're all praising her for that.
Just let it go.
We're all praising the sheriff for coming on.
I think Nicole's taking the right tack. Just let it go. It's
and
part
I,
of the
I had a lot of compliments about the gang unit and them
it.
Solving the Burian murder.
Nicole's tough.
I can handle it. All good.
And I had tough questions.
Today
I had
a great
compliments
show.
And I had tough
yes,
questions.
I know. But
I'm not like the softball people who will say things on the air and then get a government official in here and change my tone. And she was fine with it. The sheriff was fine with it.
I know. Well, anyway, hopefully the sheriff will assure her that she was not upset.
Jeez. Okay, now look at Ursula. Ursula looks like she's got a migraine over there.
Can I go back on vacation?
Oh, man. Okay, let's get to our favorite sound bites of the day.
This is Dory Monson's Awesome Audio Clips of the Day.
And our awesome audio is brought to you by Brown Bear Car Wash. Okay, at number three, remember the hilarity when Robert De Niro, who used to be one of my favorite actors, you know, Goodfellas is my all-time favorite movie, Casino is one of the all-time greats, and De Niro has become just a Trump-deranged maniac, you know, and he'll shout F Trump at award shows and all of that. Well, now he's decided a new target for his hilarious brand of humor. He was at it was called the Brass Ring Award Saturday evening, and he tried this joke.
Number three.
One reminder, the drinks, wine, and beer are flowing, but be careful. If you have too much, you may end up on the Supreme Court.
Drinking in the Supreme Court. Good one, Bob. At number two... Kevin Durant, he just hit every right note when the Golden State Warriors played an exhibition game at the Seattle Center Coliseum on Friday night. Kevin Durant came out on the court wearing a Sean Kemp jersey and said this to the Seattle fans.
number two.
First off, I want to get a shout out to the Seattle Storm for holding it down and winning the championship. Much love. On behalf of myself, NBA, and my organization, my teammates, we'd like to thank you guys for coming out, supporting us. I know it's been a rough 10 years. NBA is back in Seattle for tonight, but hopefully it's back forever soon. Please, please enjoy the game. Stay safe. I appreciate it. Thanks for the love.
Just really smart to start with the shout out to the Storm and their recent championship, and then saying that everybody in the NBA wants the NBA back in Seattle. It was well done by Kevin Durant. And at number one, I haven't seen this one yet, so this is just a bad Wheel of Fortune guess by one of the contestants.
Yeah, it was bad.
All right, let's hear how bad it was.
Number one.
I'd like to solve.
Okay.
Bridal and gold shower.
Sorry. Janet, your turn.
I'd like to solve.
Okay.
Bridal and cold shower.
Yeah, that's...
it wasn't a cold shower. Okay, those are our favorite sound bites of the day. Today's Sign the End is Near is coming up next. The stretch we come. What a day, what a show, what a show, what a day. And before we head out into the Monday afternoon, it's time for today's edition of
Today's Sign that the End is Near.
Today's sign the world is soon coming to an end. How long is it going to be, considering how much poop and piddle we have all over the streets of Seattle? And the entire region, all over the Puget Sound region. How long until we have a public health outbreak? Because down in Los Angeles, which also has a massive homelessness problem, there have been enough reported cases of typhus spread by fleas in these homeless encampments and elsewhere that they are calling it an outbreak.
We see about 5 cases per year. So far this year, we've seen 20 cases.
That has Michael Johnson, the director of public health, worried. He says typhus, not to be confused with foodborne typhoid, doesn't make animals sick, only humans, causing high fever, vomiting, and pain that can last weeks. Feral cats and possums can carry the disease. A flea bites them, jumps on your pet, and brings the fleas to you.
Flea-borne typhus is not generally life-threatening. It's not transmissible between humans, but it does make people quite ill.
The health department in L.A. County is also reporting an outbreak under the skyscrapers of downtown L.A., but Johnson says theirs been mostly among the homeless, perhaps because of their proximity to trash and feral animals. But in Pasadena, Johnson says it's not clear what's behind the outbreak.
We are not seeing that same experience here in Pasadena. These are residents who live in the city, who are in individual family homes or multi-unit housing.
So, yeah, how long until we have a public health crisis because we've allowed this homelessness crisis to continue? The drug-addicted vagrants who refuse to leave the streets because that's their lifestyle of choice. How long are we going to wait until there is some kind of public health outbreak up here? Because we're seeing it in these West Coast cities that have the tremendous numbers of homelessness. And I wonder if Jenny Durkin is paying any attention at all. I mean, right now, she's focused on getting tolls on every downtown street. That's one of her big priorities right now. And meanwhile, we're not that far away from a similar type outbreak here in Seattle. Today's sign story number two. Remember that college professor at Georgetown University that I told you about last week? She's the one who tweeted that white Republican senators involved in the nomination of Brett Kavanaugh deserve miserable deaths. Oh, that's kind of a nice little attitude, isn't it? Our college campuses are so loving these days. And by the way, isn't Georgetown a Jesuit university? Aren't they supposed to live by the word of the Lord? Christine Fair, the professor who tweeted that, She's been placed on research leave, which means she'll get to keep collecting a paycheck. I've said it a million times. What do I have to do to get paid leave? What do I have to say for crying out loud? A spokesperson for Georgetown University sent an email to students noting it's a mutual decision for the professor to go on research leave, and it's effective immediately. The dean of the school said, "This has been a challenging moment for our community as we balance our unwavering commitment to free speech and expression with the need to ensure civil and respectful discourse." Well, I think tweeting that white Republican senators deserve miserable deaths, well, I think that they have achieved their goal of civil and respectful discourse with that one. Earlier today, I spoke with Professor Fair to prevent further disruption to her students, and out of abundance of caution for the security of our community, we've mutually agreed for Professor Fair to go on research leave effective immediately. She's going to go on international travel. Hey, why don't you stay over wherever you go, Professor? Oh, man. Deserve miserable deaths because she doesn't like their policy. She sounds like a lovely lady. And finally, in today's sign, I'm not a big emoji guy. I might occasionally respond to somebody instead of saying, okay, I might just respond with that thumbs up. But I'm not a big emoji guy. At Colorado State University, their social media team has released an article, 10 ways to make your social media channels more inclusive. And it is a wonderful example of PC culture run amok. Use the yellow emojis when addressing a diverse audience. Avoid gendered emojis when possible. Instead, use one of the variations of the yellow smiley faces or object emojis. So, you're not supposed to use any gendered emojis. What's interesting about all this?
I like that name.
The nickname, the sports mascot, yes, at Colorado State University,
yes,
is the Rams.
What are you doing?
Rams are male bighorn sheep that often settle arguments with fights that include ramming their heads into others. Isn't a ram an example of the toxic masculinity and patriarchy and heteronormativity? The Ben Shapiro Show did a big write-up on this. And using only yellow emojis, he asked, isn't that a slap in the face of representation? If we're excluding other emojis because of their color, what does that say about us as a society? So if you want to be a good, inclusive leftist, make sure your emojis are gender neutral. We are quickly going insane. I got to get out of here. I've said everything I have to say for today. But I will go home and think up a bunch of new stuff for tomorrow's big show. Ron and Don coming up next, and I will see you back here tomorrow, high noon. And,
I'm a man. I'm sensitive. I need to feel loved. I need to be desired.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. You're really a fantastic audience.